A few years ago, we grew and sold a business that forever changed our lives. At first, we really struggled trying to figure out which tools to use to help run and organize our community. But that all changed once we discovered Kajabi. Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, thriving communities, personalized coaching, and more. The best part, Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. And with Kajabi, you also get robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates all built in. You don't need a huge audience to make sustainable income. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making six and seven figures with less than 50,000 followers. Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business if you go to kajabi.com/MU. That's kajabi.com/MU. Go to kajabi.com/MU and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The more a customer tells you, the better off you are at understanding how you should position your service or your product to solve that problem.
Hey there, Millionaire University friends. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Brian Guerin back with you today. And we are in for a treat with part two with Sean O'Shaughnessy of the sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. And today we're going to be talking about developing key skills and strategies. The main three key skills and strategies that we're going to be talking about are effective communication and sales, building relationships and trust, and negotiation techniques and tactics. This is going to be my favorite section on this because this is where the real human element comes into play with sales. As we discussed in part one, it can be very scary to put yourself out there, to think of yourself as somebody who's selling something. You might even feel sleazy about it. And I'm here to tell you that A, that's perfectly normal, and B, you should not feel that way. It's going to take a little bit of understanding, a little bit of getting reps in, but you will eventually see the light, I promise you. It took me a while, but I saw it. And at the end of the day, it really started turning into, for me, building relationships and building that trust. That's one of the ones we're looking at in this episode, because when you look at what you would typically call a sales meeting as an opportunity to ask questions, to empathize, and build that trust by providing a solution to the problem that your prospective client has, it's really hard to lose. And that is the bulk of what we're going to talk about today in part two, developing key skills and strategies. So without further ado, let's bring in Sean O'Shaughnessy of New Sales Expert to lead the way. Sean, I'm pumped. It's part two. What are we talking about in part two?
So in part two, we're going to build on the foundation that we did in part one, which was called establishing the foundation. The second part is developing those key skills and strategies. We're going to talk about effective communication, talk about building trust, and then negotiation. So things that people really struggle with in sales, but they're so critical to being successful in sales. And regardless if you're selling to companies or if you're selling to consumers, as long as it's not more than selling that $12.95 book that you're going to sell, because you know that's too simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the real meat of the sales in general. This is my favorite part. So I'm pumped to hop in here with you. So step number one, effective communication in sales. I want you to take it away, but I feel like I'm going to have a lot to add here because I love this stuff.
Cool. So effective communication. We've probably all heard the adage, well, he's a natural salesperson because he talks a lot and he can really tell a story. Now, those are two different things, and that telling a story is actually good, but talking a lot is not effective selling. Listening is actually effective selling. So last time when we got together in part one, I talked about establishing the difference between where your as is, where you are today, the problems that you're facing today, and where you would like to be, you know, so your to be. And I talked a little bit about you might have to convince the customer that they can get there. They may not be, they may not know that they could do that. That's very possible that that's the case. And that's an aspirational sales process. Or you may have to just confirm that you are the person or you are the company that can get them there. So they know where they want to be, and you're just confirming that you can do that. Two different things, but you're still going to make a difference in the gap between as is and to be. So effective communication means figuring out what is their problem and understanding what their problem is. And you do that by listening. You don't do that by talking. You don't ever want to tell a customer anything. You want the customer to tell you things. In other words, you want them to do more talking than you. There's an old adage, you've heard it. You have two ears, you have one mouth. You should keep that in ratio in mind when you're selling. So you should be listening a lot and even asking questions that are open-ended questions. So let's talk about that a second. An open-ended question is something like, tell me how, or why does it work that way? Or when did you do that? Or was this not the last one. Because the last one was going to be a close-ended. When was this a problem for you? Or what do you ever have this problem? Those are close-ended questions. Closed questions are questions where I can say yes, no. I get nothing as a salesperson from a yes answer or no answer. I get nothing. Unless yes is, yes, I'll give you an order. So you can ask a close-ended question at the very end because yes, I'll give you an order. But the beginning, you're trying to figure out, do you have this problem? Tell me how that problem affects you. Tell me how that problem affects your daily life, your health, your well-being, your relationship with your neighbors, your relationship with your family, the relationship with other companies or industry. Tell me how that works. Tell me how it affects your job if you're selling B2B. Tell me how your job, your company would be more profitable if you did this. Tell me how your company would lose less money if you did this, right? Those are open-ended questions that allow you to have the customer talk and you can listen. Now, listening's really important because they are telling you how to sell to them. They're describing their problem to you. They're describing their issue. They're describing, going back to what we talked about last time, their as is. And they're describing what they want their to be like. They want to be this way. I don't want to have this problem anymore. Well, tell me what that means. Tell me how that affects you. Well, whenever I have this problem happen, then I know I'm going to lose two employees, right? If you're a B2B employer, if you're selling B2B and you're selling to a big company. Whenever this happens, I know three people are going to quit. Okay, how does that affect you? How much pain is it to actually hire three new people to replace them? Or do you have to replace those people? Yes, I have to replace them. Plus, we're growing, so that means I have to hire a fourth person because I'm growing at the same time that I just lost that person. And the fact that this happened to me, whatever it was, it makes it harder to hire those people as well because they heard about that issue. Oh, how much of a pain is that? How often do you have to do that? How much does it cost you to do that? Those are open-ended questions that elicit a long response. The more a customer tells you, the better off you are at understanding how you should position your service or your product to solve that problem. Because they're basically telling you every problem they have, and they're saying, gee, if you could solve this, then I would probably buy your product. And that's really what you're trying to get to. You're trying to, in this conversation of lots of open-ended questions, tell me this, explain this to me, I don't understand this, help me out. All of those types of questions just make it easy. So there's an old actor, or an old TV show, the actor's also old, I think he's passed away, called Columbo. And Columbo was great. You watch the reruns. It was a great show. It's still on the reruns today. But he was great. At the end, he would be talking to somebody and he'd be really, you know, really casual, kind of friendly. It was always the bad guy he was talking to in the show, just so you know, I'm kind of giving away the plot here. But it was always the bad guy, always the guy that did the crime. And he's just being really friendly and being very respectful with that person. And then he would go, one more thing. This just came to me. I just had one more question. And you always knew that one more question, that was the one that was going to get the guy. Because now he's going to catch him in the lie. He's going to catch him in the spin where he's trying to fix the problem. And because he screwed up somewhere. And Colombo knew he screwed up because he read the script. But same thing when in sales. I have one more question. You always have one more question. In fact, you should never run out of questions. You should always be trying to figure out more information because once again, the more your prospect talks to you, the more likely they are to tell you how to sell to them. Last time we got together, we talked about the sales process. This is all about step two, which is qualification or discovery. And it's also about the economic buyer meeting. So those two conversations are all about, I don't want to tell you anything. I want you to tell me everything about your problem, everything about how you want to solve the problem, what it means to you, how big of a problem is, how much money do you lose because of it, how much more money will you make if you had it. So then I can say, well, if I could show that to you, would you buy it? And then you stop. And then they say, yeah, if you could do that for me, yeah, I'd be all about that.
Yep. I think this is the major misconception about sales. And I was guilty of it the first 2-3 years that I was trying to sell my stuff was I have to go in there and I have to bash you over the head with what I'm selling, right? You need this. You got to have it. I talk. Well, at the end of the day, that's just not how it works. Even to this day, I'm much better now than I was in the past, but I'll still get nervous going on into a conversation where the end goal is to sign this person as a client. And it's just easier when you take a step back and you say, just ask this guy or gal a ton of questions that are open-ended and just let them sell themselves on the service that you are offering or the product that you are offering. And it makes it so much easier and so much call it less pit sweaty because I'm just asking questions. We're just having a conversation. And if after you answer my questions, if I feel that what I offer can help you, I'm going to tell you about it, right? Because you've explained to me that I have this problem and I have that problem and I have that problem. And it just so happens that I, as the guy who is selling something, can help you with it. If I don't tell you about that, now I'm doing you a disservice. So I think it also makes it way easier and a lot easier to put your guard down against yourself, which can be, you know, it'd be like shooting yourself in the foot with a grenade launcher when you go into some of these meetings and you're just intimidated or desperate, right? So I think this is a perfect advice for it.
Last time we also talked about understanding the sales process. So just to refresh those people that didn't listen to that episode, or maybe they forgot about it.
And if you didn't, be sure to check out part one ASAP.
Exactly. So in the first step, we talked about that person's just a lead. It's just a name, just somebody. We don't know if they're good or bad for our business or not. Step two is we're going to qualify or discover those issues, right? The longer you stay in discovery mode, the better off it is for you. So too often, salespeople want to get to the next step. No, take your time. Relax. Take your time. Ask longer questions. Ask more questions. Stay in that discovery step for as long as you possibly can, because it'll make everything else go easier later on. But what will happen is a salesperson, and maybe it's a company owner that's being the salesperson, or maybe there's an employee that does sales, they get too excited. They heard the right trigger words. They heard, yes, I want to do this. Oh, let me tell you how I solved that problem. No, stop, shut up. Don't do that. Never say, oh, well, you said that. Let me tell you how I solved that problem. You don't want to do that. You want to build out more and more and more problem. You want to really dig into that pain, really dig into that difference between where they are and where they want to be, and really establish what that is. Get it down so that there's no argument about it. Don't sell too fast. Just relax. Let the customer describe all their pains. Let the customer build that problem up. And so that it's the biggest thing that they're worried about right now, because you just kind of rubbed all of their wounds into salt and they are in so much pain now. They're screaming for a solution. And then you offer them the Band-Aid. But don't do it too quick. And too many salespeople, they get that first trigger word and they go right into pitch mode. And that's a mistake, because you don't want to do that. You want to keep building that pain and then say, you know, do you make this decision? No, I don't make this decision. My partner does, or my wife does, or my husband does, or the owner of the company does, or whatever. Great. This seems like it's a big problem. Would you introduce me to that economic buyer, that step three, phase three of what we talked about last time, that stage three, that economic buyer? Will you introduce me to that person so we can talk about that problem? And then you do it all over again. You want to build up their pain until they're almost screaming for a solution. You are rubbing the salt into the wound and they are screaming for help. And then you say, well, if I could show you how to get rid of that pain, if I could show you how to get that salt out of that wound, would you do something? And so there's begging you for the answer. Now, I'm being a little facetious here, but I think everybody gets it. The faster you sell, the harder it is to sell. Take your time, build up that pain a lot.
And keeping that discovery phase open and getting as much of that pain out as you can, it builds empathy and then it builds trust. And when you're selling, trust is, tell me if I'm wrong, Sean, but maybe the most important thing, where if you don't have that locked down, you're probably not making that sell. Or is that a little too out there?
No, you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. In fact, and Brian, you've heard me say this offline in conversations that we've had both on email and then, you know, one-on-one as well. Sales is about transferring trust from me, the salesperson, to you, the customer. So I already know that my product is going to solve every problem you just described, right? Because I have a very targeted market. I know exactly what my value proposition is. If you don't know what those mean, go listen to part one. I know exactly that you are exactly my customer. You are exactly who I solve. I just had to make sure that you're having the pain and of everybody else that's in my target market. And I'm building that up in that effective communication skills. I'm building up that pain and discovery. And in that process, I'm being empathetic. And empathetic people are trustworthy people. I didn't say sympathetic. I said empathetic. I said, if you have to show empathy to your customer, I understand what you're going through. That I can see how much painful that is. I can see how that's costing you so much money. I can see how that's hurting your job function. I can see how that's hurting your relationship with your boss or hurting your relationship with your family. I get it. I totally understand it. I can see why we talked about mulch a lot last episode. I can see why all your neighbors are upset with you about how ugly your yard is. I get it. I totally understand it. Right. And I can see that, you know, you have arthritis and I can feel that pain as you got down and you put that mulch down on the beds. I get it. I bet that really hurts. Do you have to do a leave like four times a day just to get out of that pain? And they go, oh, yeah, it's terrible. I do a leave and I do Advil. I go back and forth. I do a double dose of both. Yeah, you build up that pain. You build it up so their knees ache just talking about it. Because empathy allows you to build a relationship. You relate to that problem. You build that trust because you know your product, your service solves that problem. We talked about plumbers, right? I understand. 2 a.m., you're talking to the apartment building owner. 2 a.m. sucks. You don't want that 2 a.m. phone call from your tenant saying, my toilet's overflowing. You don't want that. Just text me and I'll take care of it for you, right? But build up the pain. Talk about how it disrupts his life. Tell him about how he couldn't get back to sleep after doing it. How he had to leave the kids, leave the family, woke everybody up. The dog is barking because now he's leaving at 2 a.m. to go unclog a toilet. Don't worry about that. I'll do it for you. And then it's about transferring trust because you trust already that you solved this problem. You as a salesperson already have that trust. You know your product's good. You know your service is great. And you know you're going to make that customer happy. But now you got to convince them. And the way you do that is the more pain that they have developed and the more empathy that you have towards that pain and say, what if I could get rid of all that for you? What if I could make you so you never have to get out of bed at 2 a.m. and go unclog the toilet again? You'll never have the dog barking. You'll never have the kids crying. Your wife won't be upset with you. Would you really like that? Oh, yeah, I'd love that. Really? Now, what I'm saying is that you'll never have this problem again. I will take this problem away from you and you'll never have a problem. You'll not have any complaints from your tenants. We're going to show up within an hour. Our guarantee is this, blah, blah, blah. We show up, we get the problem fixed, we clean up the problem. And all you got to do is give me a monthly stipend to make sure that I'm doing it. Keep me on retainer and I can take care of that problem for you. Are you willing to do that? Now I'm transferring the trust. I trust that I can deliver that. I'm going to transfer that trust. I'm going to get you to trust that I can do that. When we talk about the sales process that we talked about last time, we talked about stage two, qualification, discovery. Stage three is the economic buyer. Are we really talking to the person that's going to make the decision, truly write the check, truly buy your product? Stage four, and this was big, and that is the verification step or the validation step. We're going to validate that we can solve the problem. And through that validation step, we build up trust. And so if I'm the plumber that's trying to solve the problem for the apartment owner, you know, I do the same service for four other apartment buildings right now. They never have a problem. Would you like to call them? Here's their phone number. They'll take your phone call. They will tell you about the time. In fact, let me tell you the story about the last time. Last week, he had a toilet upset, broken, 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody flushed something they shouldn't have flushed. Now they have a problem. It's stinking up the house. It's a mess. And he had to go fix it in his regular life. But not last week, because last week he sent me a text. Here's the apartment. Go get them. I went and I did it. The problem was solved. I took care of it. He didn't have to. He went back to bed. He woke up the next morning, checked his text messages, and there it was. I told him I got it done. Customer's happy. Everything's fine. No mess. The tenant is going to pay their bill. The tenant's going to pay their rent. They're not upset with him at all that the plumbing didn't work right. Life is good. I solved the problem. You want to call him? You can call him right now. He'll take your phone call. So now I'm transferring trust. So now that new customer, that new prospect understands that his competitor was probably not a competitor, probably a friendly competitor, just another apartment building owner. He's going to have a validation from that other one, a validation that I can deliver the solution to the problem that I just built up. And I had him crying. It was so bad just a few minutes ago. And I just solved his problem for him. And that is the transfer of trust. So I built that relationship by being empathetic, by asking lots of questions. And then I gave him a solution. And I said, here's a validation of what I do and why I do it. It's not just me saying it. Here's how I'm going to prove it to you. And if you don't have that existing customer, maybe it's the first time you sold this service. Well, I'll give you a guarantee. I'll give you a money back guarantee. I'll do this. There's lots of ways that you can guarantee that you can build up that trust. But at some point you got to transfer the trust that you know you can solve the problem. Now you got to convince him to transfer that, to understand that trust and have trust in you, because nobody buys anything if they think they are making a mistake. Everybody buys based on, I think this will solve my problem. I just described my problem. He understands my problem. He really understood what I was doing because I had effective communication skills. And now I'm just helping him solve the problem. So that's the whole idea of transferring trust.
I love it. It's as simple as doing what you say you will, right? You make a promise, you keep the promise. And the more times you do that, A, the more customers, clients that you'll have, and B, the more case studies you have, right? So whether they're available for reference, or if you make a 3-minute case study video with your featured clients who love you, now you've got evidence. Now you don't even have to have a prospect make a call to your clients. You can say, hey, I want to respect their time, but I have videos of all of them who have given us a glowing review. I'm going to send these to you right now. You can check them out tonight. You know, the fact that you have an answer ready for that, whether it's, hey, here's a number of Bob, my client who loves our service, or here's a video of it. You have something ready for them right off the rip that they can continue to build that trust, knowing that, well, if this guy can produce this quick, or he's got X amount of clients who love him, why would me being a client of his be any different? So now I've reverse engineered that trust by being like, I can't go wrong. These people love him. They do the exact same thing I do. Why wouldn't I love him? He's probably worth the money. Now I'm even one step closer to signing the check.
But you have a relationship because he was empathetic with you as well. So he truly understood your problem. I mean, you talked about it. You cried over it together, right? So I'm being a little facetious, but you almost want to get to that point where, yeah, I know how much it sucks to get up in the middle of the night to unclog a toilet down the street. I get it, right? You got to build up that pain. You got to build up the relationship that you understand where they're at.
When you can join in the pain with your fellow man, now you've built camaraderie, you've built rapport, and you've built that trust. And when it comes to business, you can't go wrong once you've accomplished that.
Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MU, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MU to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MU.
More and more entrepreneurs and investors are discovering the awesome franchise opportunities that exist across a variety of industries. Franchising can simply be the better path, and interest in franchising is at an all-time high. Lucky for you, John Ostenson, founder of FranBridge Consulting and a past Millionaire University guest, is here to help you explore the premier franchise opportunities today. John and his FranBridge Consulting team are part of the largest franchise brokerage in the U.S. and have vetted the market thoroughly. FranBridge is hands down the premier source for the best opportunities in the franchise world, including both active and passive opportunities. From tiny homes to youth soccer to industrial hoses to pets, senior care to mental health, and more. John has served as an Inc. 500 franchisor and is a multi-brand franchisee himself. And he does more placements than anyone else in the country. Sign up for a free consultation call with John today or get a free copy of his book, Non-Food Franchising, at FranBridgeConsulting.com. That's FranBridgeConsulting.com. Available in the U.S. and Canada.
And you had some good suggestions there. Make a video of your best customers. Hey, can I have a testimonial? Brian, you know a lot about Google reviews and all that other stuff, Facebook reviews. Do me a favor, Mr. Customer. Did I serve you well? Were you happy with what I did? Sure, I loved it. Can you do me a favor? Can you do a review of my business for me? No, you don't like being on video? Can you type a review for me? In fact, you know, here's something you might want to type, right? And just hand them the information, right? You might have seven of them already written. Just hand them one of them. Say, do me a favor. If you don't know how to write the words, use these words.
Yep, absolutely. Because now you have provided a value to them that's beyond what they would have expected. Because sometimes it is a heavy lift to ask a client for a more than a two sentence, oh, this guy's great type of review. Because we all know that those type of reviews, while they're good, it's another five star on your record. It would be great to get three or four paragraphs that go in depth about what you did, how you address their problems, how you solve them, to the tune of what revenue did we help you build, or you know, how much did your business get better, or how beautiful was your yard after working with us, and including a picture. If we're talking Google business profiles, I can go on for days about this, but you're asking them to take a step a little bit further than they probably have time for or the knowledge to do. So having a little review typed out where you can send it to them and say, hey, I think this accurately explains the service or the satisfaction that you described to me. Feel free to tweak this or change the numbers or, you know, put it into a little bit of your words. That's totally fine. But here's a template. Boom. Copy, paste, a little bit of tweaks here and there. Maybe add an image, add a video if you want, and you're done. You've now solved another problem for them that makes them feel good because they didn't have to expend too much brain power to do it. And it's a huge boon to you because now you have a great review. It's accurate. You're not lying or anything. It's just an accurate description of what you did. You just happen to be the copywriter for it. And everybody wins.
Yeah. If you're the guy delivering mulch to my front yard and fixing my problem, I hope you took a picture before. That's your app, my as is. And then you took a picture after. That's my to be. And then you put that side by side and say, this is what I did for you. Do you mind? Would you put that on Facebook for me? You know, would you do a post? By the way, here's how to write about my company. I get that you don't know how to write about my company. Here's how you write about my company. Here's the text, right? If you don't want to use it, that's fine. If you want to write something different, that's fine. You do what you think. But here's two images, the before, your as is, and here's your to be, what I just did for you. You like it, but you want to do that like right away. Because before the wind blows and blows my mulch all over the place, and now I'm not as happy anymore, right? So you want to do it right away.
It's kind of like how we were talking in part one about ChatGPT. It helps you go from blank page to something on the page that you can tweak. You're playing that part for your customer, whether a business customer or a consumer type of customer. You've now played that part of ChatGPT where they don't have to spend the 5 minutes going to ChatGPT to figure out how to write you a good review. You did it for them. The job is done. One more satisfied check mark for this customer. And they're going to love you forever.
Exactly right. And that little thing that you give them probably should have part of your value proposition. We talked about that last time too. Should have your value proposition built right in and say, this person did exactly what he says he's going to do. He's great. He's fantastic. And then for your next customer, just read my Google reviews. Just read my Facebook reviews. Look at these 16 posts that I have right now. I can solve your problem.
Once you have 20, 30, 50, 100 plus Google reviews that are five stars and everybody's happy and That's all you have to be is like, check out our Google reviews. We have 100 of them and they're all satisfied. They all love us. And it's not like we paid them to do that. These are legitimate customers who love us. So,
and if you're more B2B oriented for your service, for your product, that's okay too. They can give you reviews too. You can put them on your website. They can put them on their website. They can put them on LinkedIn if that's appropriate for your business. So there's ways you can do it there. You don't have to just use Facebook and Google if you're not in the consumer-oriented sales. If you're more of a selling a product to a company or selling a service to a bigger company, they can give reviews. They can give you a to whom it may concern letter. Those are great as well. They can also do a little video, right? Sit beside them. You know, you don't have to have a videographer. It's cool if you do. And I have videographers, and so do you, Brian, that we could recommend to everybody. In fact, I think you will even do a video in some cases. But shoot, just take your cell phone, put it on selfie mode, hold it up there and say, hey, I'm just wanting to introduce you to so-and-so. What do we do? This is what we do. There's a guy in town in Cincinnati that just about every client he closes, and he's a web developer, right? So he creates websites, a little bit of a competitor to you, Brian, but I think he's actually a partner. I think you know who I'm talking about. He sends an email out to his entire database every single time they close a new deal, tells you what they do, tells you why they did it, and here's a link to their new website. Isn't it cool? Go check it out, right? So everybody that is in his world knows that if I need a website or if I know somebody that needs a website, I'm going to introduce you to him. I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to give him free advertisement here on your show, but he's a great guy. He'll do a great job for everybody. And he talks about that customer referral all the time. And so when he walks into a prospect, first of all, he's probably been introduced to that prospect because somebody read his blurb and said, oh, you need a new website? Well, you need to talk to this guy. So he walks in and he goes, hey, just check me out. Check me out on LinkedIn. Check me out on Facebook. Check me out on my website. I'll list every single one of my customers and you can call any of them. And that is the transfer of trust.
And then once you're, even if you're starting from scratch, you start small, you start getting that snowball effect. It doesn't take a crazy amount of time to start getting that effect, even on a small scale. Perfect. So this rolls us into the third part or the third section of our part two here in developing key skills and strategies. Negotiation techniques. So I'm really interested on me personally in hearing about what you have to say about negotiation techniques, because depending on what you're selling, who you're selling to, what industry you're in, I feel like this could go a lot of different ways. So what do you say?
The harder you have to negotiate, the more that you have an idea that you did those first two things poorly. So let's just establish that from the get-go. Because if you've done a really great job of communicating, creating empathy with the customer, developing trust with the customer, then they aren't going to negotiate as hard. Now, I'm not going to say they're not going to ask for a discount, but they're not going to negotiate as hard. And they're not going to walk away with a no if they don't get what they want, because you have already done all of those other things really, really well. And it's not unusual if you do those other things really well, if you've identified your target market, you have a great value proposition, you effectively qualified the customer, you built up that pain, you empathize with that pain, you built that great relationship, you established the trust that you can solve the problem, and now they're asking for a discount? Whoa. Sorry, I don't think I can do that. And then sit back and watch, right? Now, if you can't do that, if you can't say, I don't think I can afford that. I don't think I can give you that discount. If you can't say that to your customer, then you haven't done a great job of all of the other things we've talked about so far. And that is your true test. Did I do a great job of all those five things? We talked about three things last time: understanding where you are in the sales process, identifying your target market, creating a value proposition that's killer. And this part we've talked about: effectively communicate and building a relationship and building trust and transferring that trust. Five things. If you've done all of those, negotiation can become really simple, because then it's simply like, I'm sorry, I don't think that fits in my business model.
If you did those first two things really well, you've already pre-sold this individual, right? Or this company person, right? Because you've done such a good job in the first two sections that now they're like, okay, shut up and take my money. Like, you're absolutely worth this value. I see your value. I can view it, or I checked out your case study videos, and I have no reason to believe that you couldn't do for me what you do for them. And I don't know about you, but as a consumer, civilian myself, when I am being sold something, whether it's like a high-level accelerator program or even a piece of software, right, that might maybe it costs $50 a month, when they have successfully pre-sold me, I feel like a jerk asking for a discount or a discount of some sort, whatever it is, large or small, because now I'm like, now I'm kind of being mean to this guy because he clearly is this good. I believe in him, but now it would be low of me, right? It would be beneath me to ask for a discount. Like, it's that mindset that they have done such a great job that I would feel rude asking for a discount.
And so there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't think I can do that. When I'm negotiating, they've asked for a 10% discount. I just don't think I can do that because look at all the value that I bring. Look at everything, all the problems I've solved. I need that income so that I can provide that great service to you. Now, do you not want the middle of the night service? Because I do have the service that, you don't get the middle of the night service, right? If I'm the plumber.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have the 8-to-5 price. You want the 8-to-5 price?
If the pooper's full at midnight, you're out of luck.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that you want to do in your negotiation is you want to have product tiers or capability tier or service tiers where you say, I was describing everything. I was describing all of this. Do you not want that? Do you want something less? If you don't have the budget, I don't want to break your budget. I don't want you to spend money that you don't have. So do you want something less? I have this smaller service that's not quite as good, not quite as full. If I'm the mulch guy, I have the service where I don't trim your bushes. Is that what you want? Because I'll do that if that's okay. Or I could also, maybe I don't sweep your driveway off after I dump the pile of mulch on it. So it's going to have that black mark on it. I can do that. You want to do that? You do that part. I'll do my part and I'll give you that discount. How's that? You want to trade? You want to say, what are you giving up? You want to trade something for that discount. You don't do the same thing for the same price. You do something less.
Because then you're just devaluing your service or your product.
Exactly. And that's where it's really important to understand that you have to have them give something up in your negotiations, something that you described. And you're going to get a sense of that when you're doing all that qualification about what's really important for them. And so you want to offer to take that thing away. And then they're going to go, whoa, that's the thing that I was buying. That's the most important thing. Oh, I'm sorry. That's how you get a discount is you do that. I don't do that 2 a.m. thing if I have to have this other price. But you can have the other price. You can check me out on that. And then I just charge you an upcharge every time we get that 2 a.m. phone call.
And if it's a big enough problem, typically, now here's, I feel like there's a distinction here where you can discover if you're talking to the wrong person, if they literally are squirming in their pants at paying the price to solve their problem, because maybe they're too small a target. Maybe they don't fit your ideal avatar, your ideal client, quite like you thought they did before you met. So there's one aspect where it's, okay, well, if this is really going to be a terrible financial burden for you, we might not be a fit. Now that's where you can scale it down and say, okay, maybe this is better for you. But if their true problem is that I don't want to go scraping poopers at 2 a.m., because I'm the building owner, I'm not going to deal with that, then that's what's worth the upper tier package. That's where the value lies, because now you're solving a massive problem for them. And if they don't see the value in that, there's nothing wrong with you saying, maybe we're not a fit then, because I'm going to solve this problem for you, but you have to commit to it.
And your other negotiation tactic is a lot like what you just said, Brian. The other negotiation tactic is, I don't know that I can do that because all of my other customers are at this level, and I have a lot of demand for that level. So I don't know that I need customers that aren't doing that, that don't want me for that part of my service. And that's perfectly fine, Mr. Customer. Would you like me to introduce you some lower end companies that might solve that problem for you? Because here's some of my, they're not really competitors because they don't do everything I do. They're not as good as I am, but they'll unclog your toilet with a 4-hour wait. Right. I do a 1-hour wait, and they'll do a 4-hour wait. And, maybe that's good enough for you. I don't know, but I can't do the 4-hour wait. I don't have that built into my system. And I'm so busy taking care of all of my great clients that I just can't do it.
And here's the thing. This is true in sales as it is in dating or life in general. People want what they can't have or don't have. Let's say this client today, they've identified that they're really not a good fit for your top tier service. This is all I'm offering right now. But hey, Mr. Building Owner, let me refer you out to Mr. and Mrs. XYZ. They can solve this problem. They handle this more in the type of wheelhouse you're talking about. But if you're providing this value to them, even though they aren't going to be a client of yours by the end of this phone call, in that client's mind, you've now provided free value to them. You said, hey, I might not be the best solution for you today, but this person or this company might be. Now you've kind of given them something to go with rather than, sorry, we can't help you. Have a nice life. Because let's say that building owner works with this person you recommended him to. They get the job done. This guy, now he buys three buildings. He's got two more. Now he needs your service. It's 2 years later, but he needs your service. He's calling you back because you know why? You helped him out when he was looking for help and you weren't the right fit to provide it. So I think there's a huge point to be made in still providing value, even though there's no money that's going to be entering your coffers, because you never know how it's going to come back to you in spades. It always comes back to giving before you get, right?
Exactly right. And that's that transfer of trust. I trust this guy because, you know, he introduced me to somebody else to solve a problem that he couldn't solve. I trust him. That right there builds your reputation. That builds who you are. And that's perfect. That's great. That's a great way to build trust. Once again, we're transferring trust from us. We know we're great. And now we're going to transfer that belief to our customer, our prospect.
Yeah. And there's nothing more aggravating than getting left hanging in the dust when you have a problem, you call someone, they can't help you, and they just say, peace out. It's like, can you at least do me a solid? And you're in the industry. Can you connect me to someone else you might recommend? Or, you know, we all hate that feeling of just being, you know, flapping in the breeze. So just be a good human and provide whatever type of value you can, even if it's really tiny, even if it's just a phone number. Hey, you know, go Google search this company. I don't have their website, but you search them, you call them, they'll help you. And it also builds your network. It has a network effect too.
Exactly right. Because yeah, I called up that guy and said, hey, I just recommended you for a job. So make sure you get credit for that, right? So call up the guy that you just recommended and make sure he knows that, hey, I just recommended you, right? The other thing to remember about negotiations is when you give away money to a client, you got to think of it in that way. You have to think of it in, I am going to pay you. Let's just say this. Let's just say I'm going to charge the guy $200 an hour for my service. And now he wants a 10% discount. That's $20 an hour, right? So for every $200 an hour that he gives me, I'm going to write a check back to him for $20 an hour. You have to think of it that way. He is giving you the full price. You are paying him back something else. Now you're going to net out. You're only going to charge him $180 in real life. But if you think of it as I am paying him $20 for the right for me to get $200. If you think of it in that way, then you can also think of, well, what are you doing for me for that discount? Because I'm willing to pay you $20 an hour for a certain amount of service. What are you doing for me? So your negotiation should also be about, I'll meet you where you're at. I'll help you out. We'll come to agreement. Can you introduce me to three clients? What are you doing for me to help my business that it's worth me paying you $20 an hour? Every time you call me, I'm going to charge you $200. I'm going to give you $20 back. I'm going to pay you back. But what are you going to do for me? So never do anything for free. Either you're taken back on your service or they are offering a service to you for that amount of money. It's not a discount. It's you paying them. So if you think of it always as I am paying you that 10%, I am paying you that 5% discount. I am actually writing a check to you to cover that cost.
Yeah, that's brilliant. There's always the adage of give before you get, but you're giving here. You're giving them a discount on your service or your product. Now it's time to, okay, I'll give you that discount. What's going to be had in return? And it's really only fair, right? Like if you're, it's the same thing in life. If you're going to take something, you better give something.
Exactly right. And so if you think of it as I'm paying for it, that helps you in your head figure out how to ask that question and figure out how much it should be. So if you think of it as they're paying me full price and I'm going to write them a check in return, you actually can do that as part of the transaction, but that's kind of screwed up. But you can actually do that. But in your head, you need to think of it. And that is, I need to get something in return. So never give something away. Always get value for whatever you give away, because you're paying for it. So get something back. And it's not good enough to say, well, I got the order, because that's what you wanted to begin with. You already gave them what you thought was a fair offer. Also remember stage three of that sales process that we talked about last time. Step three was I'm going to talk to the economic buyer. And when I'm talking to the economic buyer, we built up that pain with the economic buyer. We built up their as is and their to be. We know exactly where it is. And you ask the question, if I can get you to there, will you be okay? Will you pay my price, right? That's the first time you put out how much this is going to cost. If I can do this for you, will you pay this much money? If I can solve that you never have to get out of bed, you just have to text me whenever you have a problem at 2 a.m. and you have a stopped up toilet in one of your apartment buildings. If I can do that, you'll pay that price, right? You'll put me on retainer, you'll pay that price. And now you want a discount? I'm confused. You just said it was good enough before and I proved to you it was. And now you want a discount? I don't get that. I don't understand.
Right. You don't have to sell to everybody. If you get through this process, maybe it's been a two-hour meeting, maybe this is your second meeting with this person, but they're not going to budge. And if you feel like them signing on the dotted line is going to require way too much of you to the point where they'll sign and you can mark it off, hey, we got a new client, but you're angry at yourself because it's not the deal that you want or the deal that you know you're worth, now the entire relationship is likely to get off to a rocky start, assuming you didn't put any bumpers to raise that price over time, because they got what they wanted. They're probably happy. Now the expectation's on you to provide the full service that you heavily discounted. And now you're not making your full cut and you're probably not happy about it.
And so you got lost opportunity costs because now you have a customer that you're making less money on instead of a customer you're making the full amount on, but you can't do both customers because you don't have that much bandwidth, whatever. You're full now, right? So it's the last customer that you need to be perfectly full. And now you can't get one at full price. That's not good. And even if it's the first one that you got, and then you got four others at full price, let's say you can handle five customers on retainer like that. You got the first one, you gave a 50% discount. You got four others at list price. Now you can't get a fifth one at list price because you got that first one. You want to fire that customer. You're going to be unhappy. You're going to do bad service. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to hold you back as a company. So be very careful about giving without getting something in return. And that's why you always want to think of it as, I am buying this. Whatever that discount is, I am buying something for that, right? Because then you'd be really happy. Because for $20 an hour, that 10% discount off of $200, or $20 an hour, I got three brand new customers and all three of them turned into great customers. I got $200 an hour from all three of them. Man, that's fine. I'll pay $20 an hour. That's a good investment. That's a good marketing expense. But you got to think about it. You got to put that in the marketing column on your spreadsheet, on your QuickBooks.
Exactly. Under the investment column, mind you.
Exactly right.
All right, Sean. Well, I think we're getting ready to put a bow on part two here of our sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt, and more specifically, the developing key skills and strategies. So is there any parting words that we want to leave with the MU Nation before we head into part three?
Once again, my parting skills are, it's hard work. This is very, very difficult. You only get better with time. You only get better by doing, and you'll never be perfect at it. There's always something you could have done better, and you have to be okay with that in sales, because that's what sales is. And the key thing about part two was all about building trust with your client, with your prospect, and transferring your trust in what you will do a good job to them and having them trust that you will also do a good job and you provide the service that you actually promised.
You're a rock star, my friend. All right, folks, we will see you back for part three, where we're going to dive into sales tools and technologies. That'll be exciting. We're going to talk about CRMs, leveraging CRMs, sales technologies, data-driven sales decisions. This is where you can really start putting some steam behind that battleship of your sales process. So I'm excited for that. Sean, thanks again. We're going to catch you in part three.
Thank you very much, Brian. This has been fun.
All right, and that's a wrap on part two, developing key skills and strategies. We reviewed your effective communication in sales, your building relationships and trust, and negotiation techniques and tactics. I hope you found these as valuable as I think they are, because the human element in sales cannot go unmentioned, cannot go unacknowledged when you yourself are going out and trying to sell your product or service. People want to do business with people. They do not want to do business with businesses. So keep that in mind as you go out there. Just be yourself, be a good human, build that trust, and start that relationship on great footing and bring that sale home to close. Now, do us a favor and tune back in for part three, where we will talk about sales tools and technologies. We have a lot of information that we're going to go over in that part of this series, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. So we will be back with you and with Sean O'Shaughnessy to talk about part three, sales tools and technologies, of our sales fundamentals that every business owner should adopt. We'll see you all next time.